This interview with John Davis was recorded on July 10th, 2021, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
Well, I came into the, with the state, yes, the DOC, that's the Division of Corrections. That was in 2001. When I came in, I was young, 22 years old, in this place, and I started at the Maryland Penitentiary. That's down there on 4th Street, right off of Eager Street. It's actually one of the oldest jail in the United States right now that's still standing. I came in with a lot of, like, old school guys, like guys that's they probably getting ready to retire within that same year I came in. They had 30 years, 20 years working. So I came in around some good guys that gave me good training, especially from a young kid coming off the streets of Baltimore. You know, it was an eye-opener. You know, I wasn't, you know, used to that type of lifestyle, but I had to adapt to it. It was like the streets, really. It's like you're in the streets. Only thing, you're just behind walls now. Guys that had life sentences, but they got them reduced, so they was able to come to, because I was at a maximum security institution when I first started. It was at first, but the staff, the supervisors, they really made me feel at home because they kind of took me under their wing and really showed me the ropes of the institution. So, but it was basically, here go these keys, go ahead and let the guys out, or, you know, just be around them, you know, in this tight spaces, you know. So it wasn't like we was like social distancing, you know, everything was tight, you up close and personal with these guys. Like I said, I went to Baltimore City Public Schools. A lot of the guys that were in jail come from Baltimore City, went to Baltimore City Public Schools. So either they were younger than me or older than me. If they got in trouble, they did some things, that's where they took them. But me personally, I didn't start off with the corrections. I started off with the Maryland State Police. I was a cadet. That's the guys that's on at the scale houses, on the highways, that's weighing the tractor trailers, making sure they ain't overweight. So I did that at 19. That was straight out of high school, basically. And then I got into an accident during the training at the state police, and it kind of knocked me off. So I didn't want to do it again. It's basically, they wanted me to start all over again. So I said, no, I don't want to do that. So my captain that I was underneath, Captain Fisher, exactly, he suggested that, listen, you got state time, you know, what you want to do? He said, I can get you into corrections. I said, corrections? What? Like any young kid would say, wait a minute, that's jail, right? Like, I don't want to be there. But at the end of the day, that I had to make that decision just for myself. And I ain't going to lie, I made good money. Corrections, that was the draw to it. The money was good. I was making like over $50,000 at the age of 22 years old. I had to get over the fear and all that stuff because I had to pay bills. I had responsibilities and stuff like that. So that's kind of what drew me into corrections a little more. So I was a little familiar with the environment of corrections. It did distance me. It distanced me at 19 when I went with the state police from my people that I grew up with. You know, I kind of couldn't be a knucklehead no more. I couldn't go and do crazy stuff because it felt like I had a microscope on me, you know. So I couldn't do things that I probably would have done as a young kid. I had to stay straight and narrow. It kind of changed my mindset because I was kind of like a wild kid growing up. You know, I kind of did whatever. But now I was around real high people at a young age. So it reshaped my mind. So when I went into corrections, I had a lot of experience of being around top-notch people. So I presented myself with top-notch, made sure my uniform was shining and clean and impressed. And I kind of came up as a militant, you know, military type family members and stuff like that. People that I was around was a lot of military. So, and I'm not a big guy, I'm a small guy. So when I went into this correction field, I had to use my mind, and it came with a lot of heart. You had to have heart. I ain't gonna lie. You have to have a lot of heart. And dedication, and knowing what you're there for, what's your purpose. First of all, jail is intimidating. Just the look of it, the smell of it. You just, it's this awful smell that you never smelled before when you go into the doors of the place. It just blows you off your feet. So that's number one. And the guys try you. You know, they're going to see what they can do, how they try to, can they get over on you? Are you about your business? And I've seen a lot of stuff happen to other people that didn't happen to me, like getting urine thrown on them, feces thrown on them, guys getting stabbed every day. It was an environment that you really had to have tough skin and have a big heart. Yes, you do. You have to be very desensitized because you can't let everything come in. It's a lot of things, especially if you didn't grow up and see these type of things, they can be terrifying, you know. So, but by me, like I said, I grew up in the streets of going to Baltimore City Public Schools. That was tough, you know. As an only child, I didn't have any siblings or anything like that, so I couldn't call no one to fight my battles or help me fight them, so I had to do it myself. So I was real determined, and once you show that to the guys and be consistent, you have to be the same way every day. And that was the key. I can't, if I allow you to do it this day, that means I'm gonna always allow you to do it. So I had to say no. When I went to the academy, that main thing was no. That's the first thing, like, no, I ain't doing it. If it doesn't come with your package, you don't get it. You had to be stern and let them know, like, listen, you mean business, and I'm going to stick to my word. If I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. The bad side of it is that you have to understand when you're working, you're kind of more at work than your home. I did wind up getting married some years later. I couldn't flip the switch. You know how you cut the light switch on. So I'm a correctional officer at work, and I'm bringing that correctional officer being home. So now I feel like my family are now prisoners because I couldn't flip the switch. You know, people say, well, you so tough and hard, you know what, you gotta be like that with the inmates, not with your children. So that was something that I had to get some treatment for, you know, because one thing about corrections and stuff, they really didn't give you any type of reinforcements when it comes to like saying a therapist or, you know, psychiatrist or anything. You know, it's just like you just gotta be, you know, no matter what. So I kind of kept that shell on for so long until I realized that, hey, do I want to lose my family? So I had to shape up, you know. I had to change my mindset. I had to go get help, basically. I had to get help, and I did do that. The good was that I was able to support my family. The good was that I didn't have anyone try to come and kill me because I was a correctional officer. You know, the good is that I'm still here to be able to talk to you guys today, because things happen to a lot of people when they were correctional officers. A lot of guys became alcoholics. I came up with a lot of the old school guys. Every time they got off of work, they went and drank, you know, and I would do that. But I said, man, I don't want to be like them. I see them, they falling apart. A lot of guys, as soon as they retired, they was dying at 50 and 54, 55. I had to change for myself. You know, a lot of stuff you watch and you follow other people, but I had to be my own person at this time and say, you know what, I got to do better for me and my family. So that was the good part about it, you know, and it's keep you aware of your surroundings no matter what. You know, I was real observant. I pay attention to a lot of stuff before I go into a building, whatever. So I think that's a good side, I believe. You know, in 2005, corrections did a change, right? They started accepting kids, 18-year-olds. So remember, you had to be 21 to get a job back then, you know, those type of jobs. But they, I guess the employment rate was down, so they started hiring 18-year-olds. As soon as that happened, it's like you saw the jail start to go down. Also, those guys that I was telling you about, that my supervisors, they started retiring. So that meant the young people were becoming supervisors now. That really changed the game. That's when the cell phone started to come in, a lot of the drug activity, which was probably always going on, but you didn't see it. You didn't really see it. You really had to go and do investigation to see the meat of it. But then this started to come like normal. It was just like, wait a minute, this is not the jail that I'm used to. You know, you just saw the seats change. That really catapulted the destruction of the Maryland jails, really, you know, because you didn't know who to trust. You didn't know who to go to because it was a lot of gang related activities going on at that time. You know, it came really stressful and frustrating, you know, because before, when I used to go to work, I had fun, you know, because we was a team, you know. But then when you don't have that team no more, it's like you on an island by yourself. Oh yeah. Yes. I mean, I, like I say, I've seen guys hanging themselves, and we have to come back later knowing that the person is dead because they blue and white or whatever, pale. You still had to do CPR. Try to resuscitate them and things of that nature. So you come in, guys, as soon as we open the jail up, it's guys getting stabbed and blood is splashed on the walls. rubbing down the walls. You know, one thing about me, when I worked at correction, I never influenced anyone to work there, you know. So because I didn't know what type of, you know, it can ruin you if you don't get help and support, really. You know, I'm not taking away from anything. It's really a dangerous place to be, because you have to understand these guys that are there now, they committed crimes, but they don't have nowhere else to go. This is their new home. This is their new life. So just because you got them off the street, the same person inside, weapons they can make. So you had to be real mindful and aware of your surroundings at all times. So it could change you as a person on the outside as well. Sad but true. It depends on where you was. Now, some places they had to fight every day. You know, the place where I think we had a little more control. I had like cuts and stuff on my hands from when we had to, you know, subdue people. You get the handcuffs on them, and then they try to swing on you. And I mean, with the other handcuff that's not on them, that's open now, it becomes a weapon. So yes, we definitely had to. That's why we had to have a team when we had to go deal with these guys, because you couldn't do it by yourself. The reason why I'm doing what I do right now is helping people that can't help themselves. Jail before used to be, people got transformed. You know, people would, you would come in one way, you know, back in some years ago, guys was able to go to college and get degrees and get master's degrees in jail, in prison. Once they cut that out, you kind of took away from, you know, them being someone. You know, they come out the same way they went in. It messed up a lot. One thing about myself, I really wasn't like a people that just get with cliques and stuff like that. I kind of did stand alone. When I was in DOC, like I said, that was a team. We were a team, but I had a good group of people that I worked with every day. And there's things that we did that, you know, within our group, you know, that, you know, I think was pretty good. It was when I got promoted to lieutenant and I went down to the city jail where it was not like that. You know, so it was a lot of stuff, I mean, that was happening. And me as a supervisor now, I can't just overlook stuff. I have to report it. Then the people that you're reporting it to, they ain't gonna do nothing with. So after a while, you're like, wait a minute, I think they're part of it as well. So it's like sometimes I look at, they try to balance it out. If we really think about it, if you look at the numbers, way more inmates than is officers. At any given time, the inmates can take over that jail if they want to. When we talk about corruption in a sense, I just think they probably gave a little more just to keep it balanced, because if truth be told, the guys could take over the jail anytime they want. And I believe when I worked down there, they did. They took over it because it was just, you didn't know who to trust. You know, it was just stuff just happening, and they was letting people get over with it. You know, like the guy might have stabbed someone, and what the guy didn't, not on lockup. He walking around in population after he just stabbed someone, or, you know, someone just threw feces on someone. You know, they supposed to be in lockup, but they still walking around like nothing happened. So those type of things, I would say, you know, yeah. It was a little corrupting, where the people that was actually committing these heinous crimes was still able to walk freely around the institution like they didn't do anything. That was a little scary moment for myself. No, they didn't. Only thing you really get is overtime. That's one thing that the jail had, was unlimited overtime. There's always something going on there. Like you said, guys get stabbed, so that means they have to go to the hospital. So they need officers to go to the hospital now. But you still need officers inside the jail to, you know, to maintain the prison that's in the jail. So that's why overtime was just, whew. Like I said, I didn't did six figures before working at the corrections, worth just overtime. So that's what I said, the money was good. So that's what kept you going back. You know, regardless, that was the big thing. You know, the money was pretty good. So I guess that's the bait that they use to get you in. You just become a product of the institution, the jail system. Well, it kind of was, but like you said, once a person, I went to work every day. So after a while, people learn you. The inmates actually learn who you are and what you allow them to do and what you'll let go or whatever. So after a while, you know, it was just became regular. Man. Sure. Oh yeah. You never get comfortable. You never get comfortable. Always okay. Watching over your shoulder. So I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, because then you start to do that outside as well. You know, so the same behavior you use inside, you take it outside too. So I don't say I was like a paranoid, but I guess I probably was. 13 years I did. 13. I've been gone now since over 10 years now, or nine coming up 10 years. My life has been totally different. You know, that stress, I let it go, but sometimes it still lingers and comes back. But I have to put it away. You know, it's like, nope, I'm not there no more. I have to change the way I talk to people. So it's like, I'm not in prison no more, so I can't talk to the person, like, so I have to talk to them differently. So I had to learn a whole new lifestyle. Well, one thing about that, I didn't get involved in that. and that type of like why you here type stuff. I wasn't in court with you. I wasn't the judge responsibility. So when you came to jail, you here to jail. Like certain guys would act so tough and hard, right? It would give me so much hard eating pain every day. And I remember one time a guy, he would get like letters, but he would never open the letters. And I'm like, why are you never opening the letters? He's, man, mind your business. I said, hold up, what's up? Basically, the guy couldn't read. So I told him every day I would come and read a letter for him, you know, from his family members or whatever. Like, and after that, he opened up so much. He became a really cool guy. But before, probably like 2 months in, we battling every day. You know, he always was disruptive and, you know, things like that, you know, helping guys, you know, count, you know, guys, people couldn't count, you know, so, you know, helping them with just the bare necessities that you should help with. You know, I definitely did that. You know, I'm only going to give you what you're supposed to have, you know. So if I knew that you didn't have toilet paper, so they kind of became like I was a babysitter, basically, for those guys, you know. So, you know, sad but true. It used to be rehabilitation. That's what I was saying when guys was getting college degrees and working and stuff like that. Getting some skills and stuff in jail, and then they able to come outside and be, you know, contribute to society. That's not happening anymore. Not in where I was. You know, I don't know if they changed over the last 10 years. It kind of was going downhill after that. You know, guys was coming back out. Guys will go get released, and then a week later you see them back in there. I'm like, what the world? But one thing I can say about corrections, they take care of their inmates. You getting taken care of. So if you think about it, I will always ask, like, why you keep coming back? Because they're getting taken care of. When you come out here on these streets, you have to have responsibilities. You got to pay bills. You have to, you know, take care of your kids or whatever. There, everybody's taking care of you. So that's when I had to really step back and say, wow, you know, they get more in jail than they do on the streets. You know, you get 3 meals, a warm place to stay, you know. They get the exercise, you get dental health, you get so much more than people that work every day don't get. Well, it came down to, remember I was telling you when the officers, when the inmates took over the jail, you know, I was stressed out. I wasn't getting any sleep. And just remind you, I just got promoted probably 2 months within. So I'm new to this place. I saw that it was no camaraderie there with the staff members, you know, everything was just all over the place. They didn't have proper radios. They didn't have proper computers. They didn't have, I mean, it was just so much this place was lacking. So you couldn't even do your job. Like I said, I was stressed. I was breaking out in hives and stuff like that. And I just didn't know. I couldn't sleep. So I went to doctors and, you know, they said, you're real stressed out. So I talked, me and my wife sat down one day and I said, honey, I might not, this might be it for me. You know, I might be turning in, throwing in the towel, basically. She said, honey, whatever you want to do that can make you better, I'm with you. So basically, I had a lot of support to leave, because once I did that, you know, I left all of the money too. So, but I still had all of the bills. They still came, you know, frequently. So I had to make my mind up and say, you know, I'm going to be okay. Everything's going to work out for me on this next journey of my life. And it has. So, hey, I'm here to talk to you guys. So with a smile on my face and not all beat up. Now I ain't perfect. You know, I'm still working on myself, you know, every day. So I'm getting sleep more now. I'm able to sleep a little better. You know, I would have had bags under my eyes, but you know, so I'm getting rest. I'm able to spend more time with my kids, my family. You know, remember I told you I worked a lot of overtime. So if I did that, I mean, I wasn't home. Like, so now I'm able to spend quality time with the family. And you know, I'm not going to take away from it. It made me who I am today. You know, it built me up not to take crap from people, you know, not to, you know, just not be afraid of every little thing that comes around, you know, because we are strong. We can overcome anything as people, you know, so, but you just probably just need some help and support along the way. Never try to do this alone. Get help, get support. Wherever you can get it. Well, yes, yeah, so, you know, because a lot of the guys that were in jail were probably using drugs or substance abuse, had substance abuse issues. And I would see that a lot in the jail, because guys still was getting high in jail as well. I felt that they didn't have any help and support, because we have a lot of talented guys in jail as well, you know. And me and my wife, we opened up a substance abuse treatment facility, where that's basically who we help out, people that was in jail. A lot of times getting high wasn't a crime, you know, because you hurt yourself. You didn't like not hurt anyone else. So a lot of guys were, you know, getting locked up for like drug possession and stuff like that, where they didn't really need jail. They needed a drug treatment facility. So I felt that back when I was going through my motions in the jail, that would be a better way for me to help the guys on the outside, you know, to be sovereign citizens, you know, be able to participate in that world that we're in, to helping it out. We've been doing that now for 3 years now, and it's going pretty well. So, and we try to get people like myself or like Stan, you know, to come that a good voice to help and encourage these guys that they can do better. You know, they can make better decisions in their life. You don't have to stay strung out on drugs or try to rob people or, you know, be criminal. You know, you can just be, you know, work and take care of your family and, you know, live a better life. Well, yes, I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Yes, I was. Well, now I think I still probably had it, you know, in certain areas, you know, but I'm definitely better. I'm definitely a changed man from that. Once I was aware that I did have an issue, you know, because sometimes I don't have nothing wrong with me. Nothing is wrong with me. Nothing is wrong with me. No, you do have to go seek some help. That's one thing I would encourage the prison system to do, give people help. You know, I think they did move in that direction the last couple of years. It was real. I didn't know what it was before it happened. But once I understood the diagnosis, and so then I had to, you know, counteract it. You know, all right, I'm not going to be this way. You know, I can do it. We definitely need help and support. Yes, I mean, whatever. You know, anybody come with ideas, you know, we can always sit down and talk about it. Because it's a need. You know, I think a lot of times people do stuff that's, you know, that's not relevant. You know, right now we know that we all here, especially in Baltimore and across the country, have people that that suffer from these, you know, illnesses. So any way that we can help and support people, you know, a lot of us people was homeless, you know, provide housing also for the people. So anybody come with any different good ideas, you know, you definitely, if you're interested, you definitely can give me a call and we can have a talk about it and see what we can do any further.